Ever since Harry had come home for the summer holidays, Uncle Vernon had been treating him like a bomb that might go off at any moment, because Harry wasn't a normal boy. As a matter of fact, he was as not normal as it is possible to be. Harry Potter was a wizard fresh from his first year at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. And if the Dursleys were unhappy to have him back for the holidays, it was nothing to how Harry felt. Welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter. Hello and welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast. I'm your host, Sianna.
And I'm your other host, Adelia.
On this season of the Basic Cinephile Podcast, we are reliving the magic of Harry Potter by rereading all the books and rewatching all the movies. Today we are diving into the second book in the series, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
This podcast contains spoilers, so if the last 23 years since this book was first published wasn't enough time for you to read it, then stop this podcast and get your life in order. Then, come back and hear what we have to say about the Chamber of Secrets.
The Chamber of Secrets starts off with Harry living at home with the Dursleys for the summer. Everyone is eager for Harry to return to Hogwarts ASAP and to avoid any potential funny business. But when Dobby the house elf shows up determined to keep Harry from returning to school, he uses his magic to ruin Uncle Vernon's most important dinner party of the year. After this, Harry is placed on house arrest and only escapes when the Weasleys show up outside his window in a flying car, determined to get Harry out of there.
The year continues to get stranger when Ron and Harry miss the train to Hogwarts because the entrance to Platform 9 and 3 quarters mysteriously closed. The boys take matters into their own hands and fly themselves to Hogwarts in Mr. Weasley's enchanted car. Finally back at school, Harry's excited for his normal wizarding life to resume. All seems well, except for their self-obsessed defense against the dark arts teacher, Gilderoy Lockhart, who seems to think that Harry is as fond of the spotlight as he is.
But strange things begin happening. Harry hears voices in the walls, and people begin getting mysteriously petrified. This can only mean one thing. The Chamber of Secrets has been opened. The legendary chamber is said to have been created by one of the school's founders, Salazar Slytherin. He left a dangerous beast in its depths, and only his heir can open the chamber, control the beast, and use it to cleanse the school of mudbloods.
But who could be the heir of Slytherin? It's not Malfoy. They learn this after brewing Polyjuice Potion and pretending to be his best friends Crab and Goyle. And it's not Hagrid, even though he was blamed for opening the chamber 50 years ago. In a twist that no one saw coming, Ginny Weasley has been possessed by the magical diary of a boy named Tom Riddle, or should we call him Lord Voldemort, and has been opening the chamber and doing his bidding. After Ginny is taken into the chamber, Harry and Ron rush to her rescue. Harry proves that even though he is a Horcrux, he is stronger than the piece of Lord Voldemort that is inside of him, and will only use magic for good and not evil. Through his noble bravery, the help of Fox, the Phoenix, the Sorting Hat, and the Sword of Gryffindor, Harry is able to defeat a basilisk and destroy one of Voldemort's Horcruxes. Not bad for a second year.
Okay, this book is so much better than The Sorcerer's Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned so much about Voldemort and Harry's past, which, speaking of which, we had some questions from our last episode, and I have answers.
Oh, great.
Are you ready?
Yeah, so first question we had was, where did Harry get all that money, and where is James Potter's family?
Yeah, so we were super confused. You know, you see, before he goes to Hogwarts, he finds out that he inherited all of that money from his parents, and Hagrid takes him to
Gringotts,
thank you. Takes him to Gringotts. And
the one wizard
the
bank.
The one bank. And he finds out that he's just got like a boatload of galleons just like chilling in there. And we were wondering like, how the heck did he get all this money? So, I did a deep dive. And buckle up, because it's a wild ride. It took directional changes that I was not prepared
okay,
for.
Okay, can I make a guess? But like, it's a really bad guess.
Yeah, what's your guess?
Is there, like, wizard life insurance? And that's how he, like, came into this money? They're like, yo, your parents died. We're gonna give you money. But, you know.
I mean, I would just assume that the magical community does not have life insurance just because they don't
care.
They don't seem to have things that make sense. So,
True.
But that would be the most logical explanation.
Okay.
But yeah, this took a bit of a different turn. Okay, so I was searching, you know, where did Harry get this money? Where is James Potter's family? So that took me to an article titled The Potter Family, which was written by J.K. Rowling and was originally published on Pottermore, which is now Wizarding World. And this was written in 2015. Okay, so found out that the Potters are a really old wizarding family, but they didn't make the sacred 28.
Okay.
Which immediately, I mean, my first question is, what is the sacred 28? Had you ever heard of that?
I hadn't, but I would assume that, like, Sirius's family is in there, and, like, the Malfoys, and...
We're gonna find out!
Maybe the Weasleys, because, like, the Weasleys are an old pureblood family.
Okay, good predictions. Okay. So I searched then, I was like, what the heck are the Sacred 28? So that led me to harrypotter.fandom.com, and I learned that the Sacred 28 are 28 British families that were considered to be, quote, truly pureblood by the 1930s. And this is from the book Pure Blood Directory, which is widely considered to have been written by Cantankerous Knot. So this is supposed to be just another book in the wizarding world, like 1,000 Magical Herbs and Fungi or Hogwarts: A History. It's not a book that was actually written in real life. So Pure Blood Directory was mentioned in Pottermore, Wizarding World, Harry Potter, Hogwarts Mystery, and Harry Potter, Wizards Unite, but it was never referenced in the Harry Potter books or movies. So within the wizarding community, the list is controversial and the accuracy is widely debated. On the list of the Sacred 28 are some names that you should recognize, including Abbott, Black, Crouch, Lestrange, Longbottom, Malfoy, Ollivander, Parkinson, Slughorn, and Weasley.
Okay.
The Potters are thought to have been excluded from this list because of Henry Potter's pro-Muggle statements. So it's a political list.
Okay.
Other families on the list, like the Weasleys, want to be excluded from the list and claim that they do have Muggles in their bloodline. The Ollivanders are included on the list despite the fact that Garrick Ollivander's mother was Muggle-born, and other families like the Malfoys are very proud of their inclusion on the list. So, like, what the heck? Why does this fictional book exist? Why is this necessary to add into the universe?
It feels pretty elitist, and the fact that it was published, you said, in 2015... Like, yeah. This is a pretty late addition to the Harry Potter world, and, like, maybe we didn't have to do something that's, like, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure of the timeline. That might have been mentioned in other, like, Harry Potter content on Pottermore, etc. Okay. It's just that article that I read by J.K. Rowling explaining the Potter family tree was written in 2015. Okay. But basically, it's like a later edition because it wasn't mentioned in the books, it wasn't mentioned in the movies. It just feels like this really weird, like, racist fictional add-on.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess, like, the whole mudblood, pureblood, racist theme is pretty strong throughout the series, but it just, it was one of those where I was like, what the actual heck? I was not expecting this information. Also led me down another rabbit hole of, I found a list on that same website, and I'm going to link all of this on our website from harrypotter.fandom.com. They have a whole list of all of the fictional books within the Harry Potter universe.
Okay.
And another one is Mudbloods and How to Spot Them.
Oh.
Even worse. That's the worst one.
I don't love that journey.
No. So, thanks. Thanks for that, Harry Potter universe.
That's maybe too, like, too deep of a dive, where you're like, we've established that, like, mudbloods are muggle-born wizards or witches.
Yeah.
And that's a really nasty name for them. But, like, maybe we don't need to go into that depth. Maybe we could just stop there and be like, hey, here's a nasty word, and we're just gonna shy away from that.
Felt a little over the top to me.
Yeah.
But back to the Potter family. Again, published by J.K. Rowling on Pottermore in 2015. From that, I learned that the Potters are descendants of the 12th century wizard Linfrid of Stinchcombe, He was an eccentric old man who created healing potions, some of which became the foundations for Skellagrow and Pepperup.
Oh!
So he got quite rich selling his potions and left a sizable amount of money to his 7 children. Hardwin, Linford's oldest son, married Yolanthe Peverell. Her grandfather was Ignotus Peverell, and she inherited the invisibility cloak from him because there were no male heirs. From that point forward, the possession of the cloak remained a secret, and it passed down the Potter family line instead of the Peverells. Harry's grandfather, Fleamont Potter, invented Sleek Easy's hair potion, which, quote, 2 drops tames even the most bothersome Barnet, and quadrupled his family fortune. So Fleamont and his wife Euphemia struggled to have children, and they weren't able to conceive until they were pretty old, but they were able to have a son, which is James Potter, Harry's father. They caught dragon pox in their old age and passed away within days of each other. They lived long enough to see James and Lily get married, but they passed away before Harry was born. This is how Harry inherited his fortune and the invisibility cloak. And also in my research, according to Screen Rant, James and Lily were only 21 when they were killed. So they were like child brides. Like, yeah, real young. I always pictured them, I pictured them young, but like not 21. And then, God bless people. Some fans have tried to calculate Harry's worth by looking at the footage of the vault from the first movie. So they watched the first movie and tried to estimate like how many galleons were in the vault. So they, I don't know who has the patience to do that, but bless you. And then apparently the conversion rate is 1 galleon equals $6. And so they calculated that Harry inherited a little over $300,000. And then also later, he inherits Sirius's money as well when he passes away.
Okay.
So this is where Harry Potter got his money.
Well, I have a lot of questions about that.
I just dumped a lot on you, so please, fire away.
So we have, like, multiple patent-pending, you know, inventions. We have Skellagrow and Pepperup, which I don't know what is, but I'm sure that a lot it's of people important. Do. And then we also have the Sleek Easy's hair potion, which, mm-hmm. I mean, like, that tracks. The Potters are known for having crazy hair.
Yeah, you're gonna I loved need that. That was the invention, was, like, because Harry always has crazy hair.
Yeah, but you have these things, which I would assume that you're still getting, like, some kind of, you know, passing okay. money, like, coming to you. So $300,000 doesn't sound like that much money when they said that, like, it quadrupled his family fortune. Mm-hmm. Like, quadrupled. That would mean that, like, you had, like, what, $80,000 before, and then you quadrupled it, and then,
I mean, you know. You do bring up a good point. So, I do want to clarify on the Skellagrow and Pepperup. So, he didn't actually invent Skellagrow or invent Pepperup. Basically, he, like, the healing potions that he had created formed, like, the base that okay. would go on to become Skellagrow and Pepperup. Okay. So he was really good at what he did, and he made a lot of money doing that, but yeah, he didn't. Okay. This is a 12th century wizard, so this is well before patents would have been a thing. Sleek Easy, though, you bring up a very valid point.
Like, Harry, I would assume, have more like, money. That's his grandpa.
He's the only living heir.
Yeah.
It all would have gone to him.
Your grandfather made this, and so, like, this isn't that old. Like, you should be able to still, like, purchase this. You know, you should be able to go into a store and be like, Sleek Easy's. Oh, yeah, like, that's my family's. And then the Peverells were known for being, like, an old wizarding family as well. So I would assume that they've got, like, at least some kind of fortune-ish, even though, that like, her ancestor wanted the invisibility cloak. So that wasn't, like, get rich quick or anything. But, I mean, it showed that he had some wisdom.
This is true. The $300,000, though, again, is just people with time on their hands that wanted to, like, visually assess what was in the vault and convert it to US dollars.
And again, bless you for that, and that is
I love it.
Like a movie thing where you're like, we just have galleons in there, you know,
exactly.
So I'm gonna get really hung up on these little details, and this is gonna haunt me for the rest of my life. My question still is, why do we not have any Potter family members that come and, like, meet Harry? Because His grandfather, I believe, had 6 other siblings, which means that James had a lot of cousins. And, you know, like, there's a lot of Potters still out there,
this
or
is
people,
true.
Like, that are, like, 1 degree of separation from him that aren't jumping in. I know that it's not like James has a brother or sister that could have taken in Harry, but you have this whole family that's, like, a pretty, you know, like, significant wizarding family within the community, and your, you know, cousin or family member, James Potter, was just defeated and, like, but also, like, took down Voldemort. Would you not want to raise his child, give him that honor, you know?
You know, you bring up a lot of great questions. So I will continue the deep dive on the Potters next week, because you're right, we need more answers.
Yeah, and I mean, like, going back to the Mirror of Erised, he's, like, surrounded by just, like, a ton of Potter family members, because it's a really long line.
That's true, yeah.
There's gotta be someone that's living that wants to meet Harry.
Where are these
literally
people?
Every wizard in the whole freaking world knows about Harry Potter, wants to meet him, is, you know, honored to meet him.
Yeah.
And his family members don't reach out. Like, that's sketch. Like, so the do Potter, better, Potters. Do better.
You know, we give the Dursleys a lot of crap, but, like, the Potters, I mean, at least the Dursleys raised him. They didn't give him enough food, but they gave him some food.
Well, I mean, they were abusive pieces of yeah. garbage, but, yeah. like, they physically
but they were there.
Had a house, and Harry was also there. I would say they took care of him, but, like, Harry was there.
They've got the upper hand.
Yeah.
Okay, also, kind of deviating, but also from last week, we had some questions about Thestrals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why couldn't Harry see them from the beginning? I'm going to answer that question. So I found an article called Thestrals, which was written by J.K. Rowling and published on Pottermore in 2015, and it can now be found on Wizarding World. So Rowling explained, quote, "Being able to see Thestrals is a sign that the beholder has witnessed death and gained an emotional understanding of what death means."
Oh.
So, Harry isn't able to see Thestrals from the beginning because even though he saw his mother get murdered, he was a baby and had no understanding of what he was witnessing. And then also, Rowling said, it took him a couple of weeks to process the full impact of Cedric Diggory's death, so he wouldn't have been able to see Thestrals immediately after seeing Cedric's death. It took a couple weeks before he was able to see Thestrals. And then Luna Lovegood is the other notable character mm-hmm. that, you know, has that interaction later with Harry about Thestrals. Luna was young when her mother died, but Luna is intuitive mm-hmm. and unafraid of the afterlife. So she gained an understanding of what death is at a young age, and therefore she was able to see Thestrals.
That so tracks. And I think that's super interesting, like, I mean, we had a family member pass away this year, and that was kind of the first time that it really hit me as far as, like, being able to, like, understand the impact of it.
Absolutely.
And, like, as a young child, losing a family member, I did not get it.
No, I didn't.
And it was, like, a very different grieving process and a very different, yeah, like, depth of impact.
For sure, because this was not our first funeral. This was not the first person that we've known to die, but it was the first time. I would agree. I feel like this would have been the year where I would have been able to see Thestrals. And before that, I was a little emotionally closed off and didn't fully understand it.
Yeah.
So I liked that emotional component. I thought that was really deep and kind of beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And I mean, Luna is so intuitive, and she also had... I mean, it happened as a young child, and she had a lot more time to kind of process it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like she was just like, oh, your mother passed away, and then all of a sudden you see it. It's like you had years and years to kind of really gain a depth of knowledge of what that means.
And she experienced life with her mother, and then she experienced life without her mother. And Harry didn't really get that. He never felt that difference because he was a baby.
Yeah.
He didn't know. All right, so are we ready to dive into the Chamber of Secrets, the book?
Let's get into it.
Okay, so, I mean, right off the bat, I forgot that the beginning of all of the books, besides the first one, the worst part, like, the first two pages are just the worst two pages of the whole book, And it's because it's the summary of like, hey, in case you didn't read the last book, like, here's the whole last book in 2 pages.
Yeah.
So do you agree? Like, those 2 pages always suck.
It's always a hard one for me to start up. I mean, like I said before, the first book is my least favorite book. Yeah. And, you know, that one was a hard one to get into because, or not hard, it's still a really great book. But it just relies so heavily on, like, setting the tone and setting mm-hmm. things up. And I do feel like, yeah, the beginning of the Chamber of Secrets, yet again, is, like, kind of, let's recap. Let's go over things. Let's mm-hmm. talk about what these words mean. Because we still haven't necessarily established them as regular vocabulary at this point. You know?
For sure. I feel like her editor must have been like, you have to include some exposition about the previous book in case a kid gets this book and they never read the first one. So I want to know, do you know anyone that just, like, picked up these books out of order and started reading them?
No. And this is not a series that you just, like, you know, hey, you know, I'm just going to start at 3.
Casually start at 3. You're going to just go into it.
And you're like, I don't know who any of these people are, and I don't know,
yeah,
like, what this means. And there's so many Easter eggs throughout the entire series that you're like, if you speed read one of the books and don't, like, put in the time and effort, later on you get to another point and somebody can be like, oh my god, this totally relates to this, and you're like, I didn't even know that this was happening.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to go back and reread that.
Yeah.
One. Yeah.
And that's what we're doing here.
And that is literally what we're doing. Okay, so chapter one, a little clunky, a little slow, but chapter two rockets off. Okay, we get Dobby, one of the best characters in the entire franchise. I love him so much. And I just have to ask you, how did you pronounce his name when you first read
Dobby.
These? Dobby. Okay,
oh,
cool.
Oh, for sure. A hard, like, O, were
we,
you know?
I was like, Americans, we were all on Team Dobby, right?
Yeah. Dobby
heard,
hard.
And then I heard Dobby, and I just wanted to be like, oh, Dobby, all the time. And
but now I'm like, it's Dobby.
Now I'm like, stupid idiot, it's not Dobby. But Dobby.
It's not like, it's too close to Adobe, and like, he's not an Adobe.
Yeah, and I realize, I'm like, two B's, yeah, it looks more like it would rhyme with Bobby.
Yeah.
And not Toby, because that'd be with one B, but you might get the E in there. Anyways.
Here's the thing, I'm gonna blame it on the fact that that's not a real name, and I was a child. So, like, the fact that I was reading at all, the fact that I was hooked on phonics, like, yeah, that's impressive.
This
but
is very
yeah,
true.
It was Dobby or Dobby in my mind, and it is Dobby now.
Yes. Okay, so in that chapter, you know, Dobby rolls up. You're like, what the heck is this thing? He ruins Uncle Vernon's dinner party, and he's really trying to keep Harry from going back to Hogwarts. And then Harry gets in big time trouble mm-hmm. from his aunt and uncle, and they, like, take their abuse of Harry to the next level.
Oh, yeah.
They lock him in his room. He literally physically cannot leave. And they're, like, withholding food. They're, like, not giving him enough food.
It's straight up prison status where they installed a slat in his door. You are on, like, you're in isolation.
You're in the hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of intense for a kid who's, what, 12?
And also, like, you have the abuse of a child. You also have the abuse of an animal. They locked up Hedwig. Did not let her out of the cage. You know how disgusting that would be? That is a big bird. That is a giant bird locked in.
The smell in that room.
Oh my gosh. A 13-year-old boy and a bird locked in a room for a whole summer.
Disgusting.
Not it. So your home value is going down from
absolutely.
That. Yeah.
So then Fred and George roll up in the flying car, and they're like, we gotta get this kid out of here. God bless them. They pick a lock. This is what stuck with me from that scene. They're wizards with street smarts. This is why Fred and George are the best.
And it's why, I mean, they're Arthur Weasley's kids.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we're gonna be really into wizardry and all this stuff, but, like, at the end of the day, like, what's going on with these muggles? Like, they
also
do some cool stuff, too.
They're crafty. They've got those skills that are beyond just magic, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so they pick up Harry. They take him to the Burrow. This is the first time that we are introduced to the Burrow. And you just get, like, this... It's exactly what you would expect from the Weasleys, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just kind of, like, haphazard, but also just, like, charming and full of love.
I just love that the description of it, like, I'm totally paraphrasing, but, like, It looked like a small cottage where rooms had just been built up, and that it was, like, somehow held together by magic. And then it's like, because it's held together by magic. Because
it literally is. This building would not be up to code.
No, no. This doesn't exist in the real world because it, like, literally can't.
Yeah. This is the moment where, wait, is it Idina Menzel that sings the Defying Gravity song?
Yeah.
Or is that, okay.
Yeah.
I will not attempt it, but that is what this
the burrow is defying gravity.
It's defying gravity.
Yeah, it is.
So a thought that I had about how stupid magic is, their house is like charmingly messy and cluttered, which makes sense. There's like a crap ton of kids and mm-hmm. everyone's in and out. But like, can we not set up magic spells to like clean the whole house? I know in the movies they have scenes of like the dishes are being done and stuff, but like in the book I noticed it seemed like she's just kind of, I don't know, like, roughing it for cleaning.
But she has, like, a book that's, like, throw together a dinner party and, you know.
Right?
It's dinner. It's magic. And you're like, so you can, you know.
I'm like, forget these defensive spells. Like, I just want to never have to do my dishes again.
No, absolutely not. I want to, like, enchant things to where they, like, automatically put themselves back. Like, yes. If these shoes are not on feet, like, they just go to the closet.
I need everything taken care of, which brings me to my next point. Like, how are we out here in, you know, the 20th century at that point with magic, and we have slaves. We have house elves doing our chores. Now, the Weasleys don't, but the Malfoys do. We find that out later. So that's just crazy to me that, like, with all this magic, you have to enslave creatures for lifetime sentences to clean for you? Like, come on, be better, wizards.
Dobby is out here, like, polishing Lucius Malfoy's shoes. Like, is there no shoe polish spell? Yeah. Like, you can repair glasses that are on someone's face and give them a better prescription because Harry says he sees better than he had before. So you can just repair glasses, but you can't shine a shoe? Like, that seems a little...
Makes no sense.
There's only one bank. Let's just...
There's
just one bank.
Okay.
So things that don't make sense, add that to the list.
Yeah. Okay. Also, things that Ziana thought that is just stupid. I picture Ginny, like, so young, and she's just a year behind Ron. They're basically the same age.
Yeah.
They're like Irish twins.
Yeah.
I don't know why that really hit me. I was like, oh yeah, the younger sister, and like, she's so in love with Harry, and like, oh, it's weird that he ends up with like his friend's younger sister, and I'm like, they're like the same age. He's a summer birthday.
Yeah.
We don't even know what her birthday is. Like, they might be within like 6 months of each other age-wise very easily.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just a dumb Ziana moment. Okay. So,
well, I think they also portray that in the movies more, where they're like, the younger sister.
She's younger. But then you also see it with Hermione, where it's like, Hermione and Ginny are friends almost instantly.
Mm-hmm.
They just connect, and like, she clearly doesn't think it's weird that she's younger, because they're basically the same age.
Yeah, exactly. I think that it's portrayed as her being like, so young, because it's like, she's the youngest of all the Weasleys.
Yeah, there's a lot
so
of
you have like, Bill and Charlie, and you know, like, all of them, like, way older.
Well, speaking of Bill Weasley.
Okay.
So the next
chapter. Did I just segue?
You sure did. The next chapter, we've got, like, Mrs. Weasley and a slew of children hitting up Diagon Alley to get all of their stuff for the next year. We learn in this chapter that Bill Weasley works for Gringotts in Egypt as a curse breaker. Mm-hmm. So we learn a little bit more about Gringotts, our favorite wizarding institution. And so I guess his job as a curse breaker was retrieving artifacts from ancient tombs, which, like, Egyptology and, like, ancient sarcophagus and, like, I am obsessed. So he actually has a super cool job.
Oh, it's really cool. And I think it just, like, might actually exist. Like, this is the one job, or, like, this is the one thing in Harry Potter that I'm like, you know what? Wizardry and witchcraft might be real, because Egypt is, like, really cool.
Honestly, like, forget Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, that spinoff. I need a Bill Weasley spinoff, and I need there to be, like, a Harry Potter meets the Mummy, like, crossover. Mm. That's a universe that I would really enjoy.
I would like that. I would like that a lot.
And also, just give us more information about Gringotts, because, okay, so I learned that Gringotts is the only wizarding bank in Great Britain.
Oh, okay.
But I, again, learned this on the internet. I will link all of this info on our website, thebasiccinephile.com. So the way Hagrid presents it in the first book is like, this is the only bank. But like, is he really going to explain like worldwide banking systems to an 11-year-old? So I don't know what the other banks are, but I think that they exist.
Okay.
But that's still the only one in Great Britain. And I also learned that apparently they do have checks and banknotes. So you're not completely screwed carrying around like 57 galleons in a bag or something. They do have other options. And then the banknotes are actually what Hermione's parents use in this book when they take her there to shop for her second year supplies. They take their muggle money into Gringotts and they're able to exchange it for banknotes.
Okay.
And so there's a... But then it also says, like, most wizarding institutions accept them. And you're like, so it's still a little weird, but at least there's something that
that's
kind of
gotta
makes
be
sense.
Something. Let's loop back to that whole, like, mudblood thing. That whoever doesn't accept the banknotes is probably very pure blood and very elitist.
Yeah, and it also seemed like, we'll take your muggle money and we'll give you banknotes, but we're not giving you nickels and. Or sickles and...
Canuts.
We're not giving you canuts.
Galleons.
Galleons. You don't get them. Okay, so to kind of backtrack a little bit, to get to Diagon Alley, we get the famous Diagon Alley scene where Harry is... They explain the flu network to him and clearly don't do a great job because he ends up in Nocturne Alley.
Yeah. I mean, I know you were going to bring this up, but, like, I have to interject. That is the most ridiculous way of travel. It's hey, stupid. So you're going to stand in here, you're going to go by yourself, you're going to stay somewhere, and you're going to throw this on the ground, and then you're just going to try and get out at the right grate. You don't want to go too far, but you don't want to get out too early. I thought that if I'm saying this, that I kind of just, like, told you where I'm going. Like, I don't want to have to pay an Uber and be like, hey, this is where I'm going. And they're like, I'm just going to speed by and you just have to jump out when you see your stop.
Yeah, that's a one star for me.
Yeah, that's a hard
one
pass.
We are one starring the flu network. Also, tuck your elbows in. You're like, what? So it just like beats the crap out of you as you?
Yeah.
This is horrible. Horrible system. But he ends up in Nocturne Alley, and then he sees the Malfoys there, and he has to hide, and he hides in a cabinet. Is that the Vanishing Cabinet?
Yeah, it is.
Oh my god! Like, that's an Easter egg that I didn't realize.
Yeah, and I feel like they miss out on that in the movie, but we'll go into that next week. But yeah, it's the Vanishing Cabinet, and then Malfoy says that he wants the shriveled up hand, which is the Hand of Glory, which is what they use in the... I want to say the last book, when there's, like, all darkness all around.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, like, the whole, you know, taking over Hogwarts. And he's got the Hand of Glory, and he can see.
I don't remember that at all. You're blowing my mind.
You will see the Hand of Glory.
Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
Comes awesome. Back to us. And I think also the, maybe the necklace that curses Katie Bell. I think we get that in this book as well.
Oh, my God. They give us so much. They give us so much. Well, Harry and Ron have to fly to Hogwarts in the car this year because they just run straight into the platform. And I gotta tell you, just from a comedic standpoint, that's a top five moment of this franchise for me. Like, you're just like, okay, we're gonna run into this wall and it's gonna do exactly what you would think running into a wall is gonna do.
I love me some physical comedy. And, you know, we get that. We get, you know, flying to the school and crashing into the Whomping Willow. More.
All great.
More
all
physical
great
comedy.
Yes.
And then, I mean, that leads to the snapping of Ron's wand, which just
gives us
does
everything.
Not quit. That wand, I mean, it quit, but, like, we don't quit using it, so that just gives me so much joy.
I love Ron, and I want Ron to have a functioning wand because I care about him. However, I really love Ron having a broken wand, and I want it to be broken forever because that's hilarious.
It's absolutely fantastic, and I love that he's just like this is something that's going to impede the rest of my school year at the very least, if not my entire wizarding career, but I am too afraid of my mom and what she's going to say to me about how I broke my wand
oh my
that
God.
I'm just going to Literally eat slugs.
Yeah, my fear of this broken wand is not as great as my fear of Mrs. Weasley, who sends the howler, which again, great, great moment. So yeah, when they fly to Hogwarts, there is this really great Minerva moment, because they get caught, obviously. They're like not subtle about this. And McGonagall is like, yeah, I'm not going to take any points away from you guys because the school year technically hasn't started. So like, we don't actually have to punish Gryffindor. And I love that she is just like so competitive.
Well, she's coming off the high of winning the previous year.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really great to win.
Yeah. And she's like not willing to give that up again. So I do love that. I also love that she's like, I'm not going to let you guys off easy. Like, no. I'm not going to let you take away from the collective, but you two individuals,
yeah, you're still going to get punished. You're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then also I had a note about Ron's wand. It's just so good. The moment, like, we learn the term mudblood in mm-hmm. this book. Theme of this book is racism. So Malfoy calls Hermione a mudblood, and like Hermione and Harry don't get offended because you can't get offended by something that you don't know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron knows what that means, and he gets pretty upset, tries to curse Malfoy, and ends up throwing up slugs, which is just the grossest thing in the world, but also just like makes you so endeared to Ron even more that you're like, oh my god, he was so upset. Like, you don't talk to my friends like that.
Mm-mm.
Eat slugs.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate and that the wand backfired.
I also love that that is a curse. Like, that's something that you can tell someone to do. Eat slugs, man. Like, that's a really great kind of, like, shade thing to throw just in life. Be like, eat slugs.
Eat slugs.
But that, like, literally, can you imagine being forced by magic to eat, to ingest a slug over and over again?
Okay, and seriously, like, people who are listening, I don't know how familiar you are with slugs, but we grew up in the Northwest, so we are all too familiar with slugs. They are disgusting.
Nasty.
They are so slimy. They look like little aliens. They're so gooey. There was always like a weird kid at school that would like eat a slug to get attention. And looking back, those kids probably needed like help. You never had that?
There was no, not eat slugs. There's a slug that has poison on the bottom that will make your tongue go numb.
Banana slug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had heard of people licking a slug.
Okay, maybe
but
not eating it.
That was a thing
that I remember hearing. There was always like some kid that was like doing something gross with slugs, like to get attention and disgusting. So yeah. Eat slugs. That's great insult. Horrible activity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, so segueing into chapter 8, the Death Day Party. We've talked about this in the last episode, or our first episode with the first book, that one of the best parts of the books versus the movies is that we get more of the ghosts,
mm-hmm.
and we actually get Peeves.
Yeah.
So this was just like a delightful chapter to me. It kind of starts off with Harry, he gets in trouble, and he's in Filch's office, and nearly headless Nick, like, is Harry's homeboy, and he's like, I'm gonna get him out of there. So he arranges for Peeves to go grab the vanishing cabinet from Hogwarts and throw it outside Filch's office and make a big old mess. And so Filch has to go out and like deal with that. So I love, like, by chapter 8 we've already had the pair of vanishing cabinets, and we get the nugget that the one at Hogwarts is broken. Because Peeves broke it. So, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Easter egg.
Love that.
Overload.
Love that.
Love that part. And then, you know, Harry's feeling a little guilty and like, also, thank you so much for helping me. So he ends up agreeing to go to a party. Classic. You get roped into a party that you don't want to go to. This one happens to be nearly headless Nick's Death Day party. So he's there with all of these ghosts. And I was so intrigued by that whole party scene, that there's like all these like nasty rotting foods and it's like freezing cold in there. And then you get the
Headless Hun.
Yes, the Headless Hun.
The cool kids.
The cool kids come through and they're doing all these jokes and stuff. And they won't let nearly Headless Nick in because he's not fully headless. Oh, your heart just breaks for him.
It does. But then also, like, you see why he can't be. How can you play headless Polo, you know, using your head as the ball.
He can't throw his head.
Yeah,
he
but they're, like, can't. So showy and rude, like, I don't, you know, in the middle of his speech. I'm like, you guys...
He shouldn't want to be a part of that group, but you can see why he wants to be a part of
the
group.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the other ghosts at Hogwarts, I mean, you have... the fat friar, who, you know, I'm sure is very nice.
Yeah.
Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
And then you have the Bloody Baron, who's not known for his, you know, real jovial spirit.
No.
And then you have Ravenclaw. Why can't I think of her name? It's Rowena Ravenclaw's daughter, who you don't really even hear anything about.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's, like, off doing her own thing. Not
she's probably,
a part of
like,
it.
Reading books and stuff.
Yeah, and then you have Peeves. And then Moaning Myrtle.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a lot of people that you're just, like, chilling with. You don't have the camaraderie.
None of those seem like people that Nearly Headless Nick would want to hang out with.
Yeah, and then you're surrounded by kids. I'm sorry, but, a eternity of hanging out with middle school to high school kids. No, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of energy.
That is a horrible lifelong commitment to make, because I used to teach middle school and high school, and I did it for 4 years, and I used to love working with kids and thought it was my life passion, and then it turns out it was not, and now I'm enjoying a break from that. So I'm mm-hmm. like, that is a huge commitment to be, like, eternity at a school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you might love it for a while, and then you might be done with it.
Yeah, I'm... ready to move on to a different area.
Yeah.
Not somewhere else.
We're done with this.
But we...
Which is exactly how Harry and Ron and Hermione felt about the Nearly Headless Nick party. They were like, dude, it's freezing cold and we're starving. We gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
So they leave, and that's when they find Mrs. Norris has been stunned. And they're
petrified.
Like... Or petrified, yeah. And they're kind of like in the wrong place at the wrong
mm-hmm.
time. And they find her there. And... Malfoy, being the little twerp that he is, he sees, like, enemies of the air beware and yells, "You'll be next, mudbloods." And I just, Malfoy sucks.
Malfoy sucks, man.
He sucks hard.
He's not that smart and he's not that talented, but he is that rude.
He's so rude. And everyone then is so mean to Filch, and I'm sorry, Filch might be a jerk and you might hate him, but Mrs. Norris is, like, his best friend, it's his family, she's petrified, and people were so mean to Filch, my heart just, like, broke for Filch.
Yeah.
In this book.
Same. I mean, I have two cats and a dog, and I am obsessed with my cats.
Obsessed.
Like, literally right now, I'm wearing a shirt with cats on it, and it's my favorite shirt.
Yeah.
You know, it's fantastic. And I really felt for Filch in this moment, that, like, he's a squib, so
yeah.
You know, he is not a mudblood. He has the wizarding, you know, pedigree.
Yeah.
But he's not good at it. He's not able to be a wizard the way that everybody else in his family has been. So here he is, you know, trying to do his best, and yeah, he's kind of a jerk, and I don't super love that, you know,
yeah,
a lot of his moves, but he has a cat that he is really close with. Like, that's his person to go
yeah.
hang out with at all times. So, yeah, I felt bad for Filch.
Felt really bad for Filch in this one.
Okay, just moving on to get some more Easter egg stuff that we see. Like, Harry goes into Dumbledore's office for the very first time, which we, you know, he ends up spending a lot of time there.
Yeah.
But he tries on the sorting hat again and, you know, gets that, you know, you would be great in Slytherin. And he's immediately angry, which I love. And, like, he doesn't want that. We have Fox, who bursts into flames, which I think that's great timing. But
perfect.
Then, you know, it's Fox, the twin core. You know, you have the Phoenix that allows both Voldemort and Harry's wands to exist. You know,
yeah.
Like, that's a big deal. And I love that it came from Dumbledore. Like, Dumbledore's phoenix that he's had for a long time. And he, like, doesn't love Voldemort. Like, he has some, you know, Tom Riddle back as a kid. He was, like, not a fan of Tom Riddle. But then also Harry, who's his, like, favorite. So I think that's really fun.
That is a great part. But Dumbledore is so frustrating because he asks Harry up there to see if he wants to say anything. Because we know at this point, Harry's hearing a lot of stuff in the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really know what it is. And he asks Harry, do you have anything you want to tell me? And Harry says, no. No, he does not have anything he wants to tell.
I feel like it's
and super, he just lets him go.
It's super weird. They're, like, really letting all these kids choose their own adventure. But you, like, literally have teachers and, I mean, like, Dumbledore as well, that can read the minds. You can read my mind and you know, very perceptive, very smart, all this stuff. And they're, like, not really providing the safest space for them to, like, come and share these things. Of, like, hey, I'm hearing things. And, like, everybody's just like, that's really bad. You don't want to tell anyone.
Yeah, you don't want to hear things.
But, like, maybe if you have an inkling. I mean, we're getting all these Easter eggs, like, early on of, like, that Harry's a Horcrux. That he, can, you know, has parts of Voldemort inside of him. These things that, you know, connect him. And, like, Dumbledore has kind of, like, suspected this for a while at this point. And I don't understand why he couldn't open up that door a little bit more to, like, hey, Harry, when...
I feel like he could have pressed it a little bit more and Harry would have told him. Because mm-hmm. Harry didn't really have anyone to talk to about this.
Again, where is the family here?
He would have welcomed the opportunity mm-hmm. to have that conversation. But instead, Harry and Ron and Hermione take it into their own hands and they're like, we got to figure out who the heir of Slytherin is so we can stop all of these mm-hmm. attacks that keep happening. So, you know, they brew the polyjuice potion.
And for that, I have to say, I love that Hermione is the one driving the ship that says, like, full steam ahead, let's do this rule-breaking thing.
Break the rules. I know exactly where we can do it. I know exactly how we can get all of the supplies.
And every time that Harry and Ron kind of chickened out, she's like, are you serious? We're gonna do it.
And I know exactly what we can do to get the note signed for mm-hmm. us to go into the restricted section.
Yeah, and also she's like, I'm gonna use the invisibility cloak because I don't trust either of you to grab the right stuff. So I just need you to cause a distraction. Just be yourselves. And I'm gonna go get this and I'll be back.
She's the best.
That is like a real, real prime Hermione being a Gryffindor.
Strong Gryffindor she's energy.
Super Ravenclaw-y, but like she, see, that's where the Gryffindor comes
the
into
Gryffindor
play.
Comes
like,
in.
I'm really smart, but like, I'm gonna break the rules if I need to. This is my people.
Yeah. So they do the Polyjuice Potion, obviously. Mm-hmm. Hermione gets turned into a cat on accident, so she does not go.
No.
And Ron and Harry become Crabbe and Goyle, and they walk and find the Slytherin common room, and it's so funny, the banter they have back and forth mm-hmm. of, like, do you know how weird it is to see Crabbe, like, thinking?
Yeah. Or, like, your arms don't swing like this, and your face doesn't look like this.
Yeah.
I thought
right? It's like, you took their body, but, like, I can tell it's not them. Yeah. I love that part. But they finally find the Slytherin common room, and the password is pure blood.
So gross.
Get out of
it's
here,
just
Slytherin.
Like, you didn't need to do that. Like,
this is a school.
Yeah, like...
Snape, did you set that password? Like, who sets the passwords?
Yeah, it's not really setting, like, the whole precedent of, like, we have four houses that work together and, you know...
No.
And coexist.
Not
no.
at all.
No coexisting,
not, no
lifestyle.
No coexisting. None. But they do... They're able to gain some important information mm-hmm. from talking to Malfoy. So they learn that he is not the heir of Slytherin. So they're kind of disappointed by that. But they do learn about the Malfoys' secret chamber under their drawing room floor.
Love that.
At their house. So, again, more Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Learning a lot. And then, I love this part. They go back to the bathroom and they find out that Hermione's a cat and she starts freaking out because, like, the boys have changed back into themselves and she is still fully a cat. And Harry just goes, we gotta go to Madame Pomfrey. Quote, Madame Pomfrey never asks too many questions. And I just realized, like, for next week, I'm going to do a deep dive on Madame Pomfrey because she's awesome. She plays a really important role in mm-hmm. the series. Even though it's, like, minor, it's, like, crucial.
Yeah, I mean, she's just out here saving lives.
Yeah, I want to know more about her. So, stay tuned next mm-hmm. week. You're going to get some Pomfrey content.
Oh, heck yeah. I think it's just crazy that Hermione spends so much longer than I remembered her spending.
She spends the whole book in the infirmary.
Like, she turns into a cat, like, in just, like, weeks and weeks and weeks. And that's, like, during holidays. Mm-hmm. Yep. So she, like, spends the whole rest of the Christmas holidays to the point where they're, like, bringing her all of her books and stuff like that, all the assignments. For weeks, people are questioning if she's already been petrified because they haven't seen her.
Yeah.
But, like...
No, she has a rough time this year.
Yeah, it's a hard time to be Hermione Granger.
But it's kind of a hard time to be everybody in this series. It's a rough year. So, Harry finds the diary that we know later Ginny has had. But he finds the diary, and he doesn't really, like, know what to do with it. So he just writes in it, like, my name is Harry Potter. Which, honestly, is just, like, the golden ticket that, you know, that Tom Riddle's been waiting for on the other side.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Also, who has ever, like, written in a diary and just been like, my name is Adelia Weston?
Right?
You know, like...
Tom Riddle was probably like, dang, I had to, like, really work at Ginny to get some information. And Harry Potter's just like, I'm the most important wizard in the world. Here you go. Now you know.
I just feel like I probably would have, like, started with something like, my day wasn't good. And then, like, the ink would disappear and I'd be like, what's happening?
Dear diary. Dear today.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. That just seemed weird. But, yeah, it's definitely the golden ticket of, like,
you're Harry Potter? Well, I've got some information to show you. And he shows him the first time that the chamber was opened. And he sees that flashback and he sees Hagrid being blamed for opening the Chamber of Secrets, which made me wonder. I was like, what house is Hagrid in? So I looked it up. He's a Gryffindor.
Oh, totally.
That's what I would have predicted.
Because he's brave. Like, the man is not all wit or brain, but he is incredibly brave and will, you know, like, do anything for his friends and his family.
That's for sure what I thought, but I just wanted to confirm, and they said, like, that's never mentioned in the books or anything, but yeah, he's a Gryffindor, so.
Yeah.
Spoiler, but not really at all. Hagrid's in Gryffindor. Poor Hagrid. So he, like, got kicked out of school when he was a kid because he was blamed for opening the Chamber of Secrets, which he didn't do. Then the second time, because of everyone's least favorite character, Lucius Malfoy, he gets basically the school board. I love that we have, like, an angry PTA school board power-tripping moment. Anyone who's ever worked at a private school can, like, relate to this hard. That parents, if you're a parent, bless you. Promise me to not be the worst, because you are capable of it. Lucius Malfoy bands everybody together and says, we gotta get Hagrid out of here. So they send Hagrid to Azkaban, which feels really extreme.
It feels like a lot. It feels like a lot. Also, on the same subject, but a little off. So Hagrid was like 12 or 13 when he, quote unquote, opened the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Because I think they say he's 12. And that was 50 years ago. So Hagrid, number one, is 62 years old. 63 years old.
So those bangs that we talked about, there should be a little more salt in that pepper.
He looks great for 62.
I need Hagrid's skincare regime. Yeah,
absolutely.
Regimen. I always say regime, and that's just not the right word.
Well,
regimen.
It's a regime because it is a militaristic, you know... It is, you know, something that you have to really work for.
Willing to hire an army if I can age like Hagrid. Like.
Exactly. But then they say that they hire him on as, like, as the groundskeeper. And I want to know, like, how long after that. Because, like, he was young.
They make it sound like immediately. And I always thought that was weird. I'm like, so that's basically being like, hey, we're kicking you out of 7th grade. But if you want to mow the lawn, you can live at the school. You're like, what?
Just not in the castle. You're going to have your place off campus.
That's a weird plot point.
It's a really strange thing that I, like, have some questions about.
Also a weird plot point. So Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, he's there. And, you know, Ron and Harry are hiding under the invisibility cloak. So that's how they hear this. Mm-hmm. But Cornelius Fudge says... Like, don't worry, Hagrid, like, you know, you're gonna go to Azkaban, but, like, you know, basically, like, we're gonna grow the mandrakes, and we're gonna make this potion, and then we're gonna heal the people who have been petrified, and then, like, hopefully we'll have more information, and we can maybe clear Hagrid's name, or we can figure out, you know, what's really going on. And I just wanna know, like, Is this really the only place in the world that is growing mandrakes? Well, no one else has a mandrake?
They can be grown by seventh grader. They can be grown by 13-year-olds. Like, it's in the curriculum for 13-year-olds. You're telling me that nobody just, like, has, you know...
No one.
Friendly neighborhood mandrake grower?
I can't, like, pop into the Flu Network and, like, find somebody in the world that has this? Can't use a port key and get a mandrake? I don't know. This just seems like someone in the wizarding community, this is a problem. Inefficiency, we need to solve this.
I understand that, like, people aren't going to be petrified all the time and that you need access to this heavily.
It's a rare plant. Yeah. Like, it's not a common thing, mm-hmm. but again, somebody in the world. And this is Hogwarts, and these are kids that have been petrified. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure if you put it out there in the Daily Prophet, like, hey, looking for mandrake donations so you can unpetrify children mm-hmm. at Hogwarts, somebody's going to step up.
However, I do really love seeing the mandrakes grow up. Like, that has got to be one of my favorite parts of the entire book is, you know, like, you meet them when they're little and, yes. like, you know, you might, you know, pass out if you hear them, but you won't die. And then, you know, later they've got acne, so they're growing. And then I love when they're like, we know that they're growing up because they threw a party in the greenhouse. They're teenagers.
When they start crawling into each other's pots, we'll know they're ready.
Yeah. And so, I was like, that is just really funny. Like, you got this whole growing up phase. Like, they're little.
Honestly, the mandrakes could have a spinoff, and I would watch that, too.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yes. They are fascinating. Also, we discovered recently, we have two cats, and they are quite loud. And
especially around feeding time.
Yeah, when you're going to feed them, they just start meowing a lot. And we've realized they sound like crying mandrakes. So we're definitely going to record it later and throw it into an episode or put it on one of our Instagram stories or something. But yeah, we live with mandrakes.
We live with mandrakes. That's where we are.
Oh, and they have big teenager energy.
Oh, big time.
They're partying. Not a party is when Ron and Harry get told that they need to follow the spiders. And we all know that's Ron's, like, biggest fear.
Mm-hmm.
So they...
And they're huge! Aragog is the size of a small elephant. Like, the movies don't do this justice. Like, it's massive.
It's terrifying. And I love that, like, Hagrid is so sweet and so trusting. And he's like, no, nothing would ever happen to you guys. Like, they would never cause you harm.
Just follow the spiders.
And then they for sure, Aragog is like, yeah, my kids need to eat. We're going to eat you. And it's the car that saves them.
Yeah, I love the car that's gone feral.
I love that. But then they figure out that Hagrid is not the one who opened the chamber. We all kind of suspected that. But then we do realize, like, the chamber's been opened again. Hermione is now petrified. And we find out that Ginny Weasley has been taken into the Chamber of Secrets.
I think that this book does a really good job of showcasing the deductive reasoning that, like, Harry and Ron both have. Like, they're both very... they're not as smart as Hermione, but they are smart and they are, like, perceptive to what's going on around them. So the fact that they, like, followed the spiders and they come to the conclusion of where the Chamber of Secrets is before knowing what Hermione had given them, which is, you know, that it's a basilisk in there and that, you know, like, that it's, getting through in the pipes. It's like, oh, we might not have had those specific information things. But we do know that Myrtle was killed in the bathroom.
Yeah.
We can go there. We can ask her. She says it's over here. And then he sees that it's the snake on the...
Yeah.
On there. And is like, I guess I have to talk... I have to be Parseltongue in this moment.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that that is why they work so well together, is all three of them are really, really great together. But separately, they're not idiots. They're very, very smart and very... willing to just go anywhere. I mean, Ron hates spiders, but he's like, I've got to do this. I'm gonna do it.
I've got to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so after they find out that the chamber's open, you know, they know they're supposed to, like, go with their houses and, like, go somewhere safe. And both of them are like, no, we have to go save Ginny. Mm-hmm. So that is just both of their immediate responses. And so they end up, I love this, they end up under the invisibility cloak, but in the staff meeting with all the teachers at Hogwarts. This is one of my favorite scenes of the whole book. And I just want to shake Snape's hand. Like, I want to give him, like, a Paul Hollywood, like, this is a great bake, like, handshake. Because
the handshake.
The handshake. Because they're all sitting in there, everyone, except for Gilderoy Lockhart, pretty boy, and he comes in late and he makes an entrance.
Oh, what did I miss?
And Snape goes, just the man, the very man. A girl has been snatched by the monster, Lockhart, taken into the Chamber of Secrets itself. Your moment has come at last.
I love that. And when they're like, you were saying that you knew exactly where it was. You said that you wish that you had a crack at the beast before, you know, it was taken care of. So, like, this is your chance. This is all you. And I love that when he's like, oh, yeah, like, let me go get ready and leaves.
Yeah.
That McGonagall is like, well, that got rid of him.
I was going to say, like, it's McGonagall and Flitwick. Flitwick, I think, that all really, like, team together. I love that McGonagall-Snape dynamic. They don't get along, but they also, like, really respect each other.
Yeah, you're really talented.
And
you're
they really saw smart. This moment of, like, yeah, let's mess with Gilderoy. Because they
he's
know...
He's not going to be helpful.
Well, they know he's not going to go look for the chamber. So it's just like, let's scare this guy and get him out of our hair. Because otherwise...
I can't hear about him talking how he's done this. And he knows exactly where. And he knows these things. And it's like...
He's going to be in the way the whole time. So they need to get this guy out of their hair so that they can actually make a plan.
But I also hate that their plan is like, well... Ginny's a goner. Let's just get the kids out. Right? I'm like, so, I mean, we've said that we've searched for the chamber before. We've done that and stuff. But, like, can't you try again? That was 50 years ago. You tried 50 years ago and, like, tried again. Or, like,
some of them might have, though, and we just didn't really get that storyline.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was insinuated that there have been trials throughout the years. But, like, I don't know. Maybe just try again. Maybe let's try to find Ginny Weasley.
Because it's the heads of houses that are supposed to go and talk to the kids. So, like, what was everyone else doing? I would assume you'd at least, like, look around and clear the halls and make sure no one's there. And, like, I don't know. It seems like they would look. But anyways, Ron and Harry are not scared. And they go grab Gilderoy, which is just the best. And they go and they find the chamber. And they bring him down there. Mm-hmm. And Gilderoy is just hilarious the whole time. And Harry's able to open the Chamber of Secrets because he's partially the heir of Slytherin.
Yeah, he is.
He doesn't know
literally.
That. And I never, you know, you don't realize this the first time you're reading it through.
Well, and then Dumbledore says later, like, Voldemort transferred some of his power to you. And you're like, well, couldn't you have told me that a little bit before? Like, couldn't...
Dumbledore again out here being the worst.
Yeah, like... He doesn't give enough information, but then he gives, like, too much another, like...
It's, like, enough rope to hang yourself, but not enough to actually do anything with it.
Like, let the kid in on secrets. He has been, at this point, attacked by Voldemort 3 times.
Yep.
He has come out 3 separate times, like, I don't know.
But it is, not necessarily Dumbledore himself, but it is Harry's loyalty to Dumbledore that does... Mm-hmm. Save him in the Chamber of Secrets because he stands up for Dumbledore and in that moment of true loyalty, and that's what summons Fox to come down to the chamber.
But I also love that Harry's like straight up like talking out of his butt at this point. He's like, I just have to keep saying things because I am scared, but if I keep talking and if I say things like maybe I can kind of get him mad, maybe Riddle does.
Hey.
He doesn't like this. And
it worked.
It did. I mean, fake it until you make it, for sure.
Yeah.
But I just love that it's, like, not necessarily Harry's, like, unwavering loyalty to Dumbledore, but it's just, like, I trust Dumbledore, and I don't like you, but I don't know what to do, and maybe if we keep talking, then I don't die.
It's enough, though.
Yeah,
it is. It's enough, and it summons Fox, and Fox brings the Sorting Hat. And Fox is a true ride or die. He brings the Sorting Hat. He attacks the basilisk and takes out the eyes. So clearly phoenixes are smart and agile and have sharp talons.
Oh, yeah. Big
sharp,
time.
Sharp talons. So he takes out the eyes of the basilisk and then Harry gets the Sorting Hat. And he's like, what the heck am I supposed to do with this? But then the Sorting Hat...
I love that it hits his head. He puts the Sorting Hat on because he's like, I don't know what to
That's
do.
That's exactly what I would
like,
do.
Like, I guess I'm... I got this hat.
What else are you supposed to do with the hat? You're going to put it on.
And I just love that the sword just, like, drops on his head.
Yeah, and he's like, what the heck? probably hurt pretty bad.
It's a giant sword with rubies the size of eggs. Like, a ruby hitting your head that
this
hard.
Thing is goblin made.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be hefty. Yeah, so he gets the sword, and he's fighting off the basilisk, and then takes the basilisk fang and stabs the diary,
mm-hmm.
kills Tom Riddle.
I love that he gets stabbed by a basilisk. Like, he...
Oh, yeah!
That this is something, like...
He thought he was gonna die.
Yeah, in the book, it kind of, like, insinuates that, like, this... The roof of this basilisk mouth is just, like, full of fangs. Like, yeah. There's just a lot of them, but it's like, I'm gonna go up in there. I gotta do it, and yeah. I'm not gonna be afraid of it.
Yeah.
What am I gonna do?
What am I gonna do? I might die. And then he does almost die. And then again, Fox being a ride or die
mm-hmm.
saves him with the power of his tears.
I also love that, again... Voldemort's own, like, arrogance is his downfall. He has been talking about how he got his soul from Ginny Weasley writing in this book, that he came out of the diary, that the diary was, you know, part of him, part of a memory preserved in a diary, all this stuff. Like, if he hadn't given that much power to the diary and to his own cleverness and to his, you know, like,
or
just
even
tooting his
told
own horn.
Harry about it. He didn't have to tell Harry
no,
all of
he
that.
Didn't.
This is, like, one of those, like, where a criminal gets caught and then they just, like, they want credit for their crime. So mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, I want credit. I want people to understand how great I am.
Yeah.
And he doesn't take into account that, like, Harry's a human being and human beings will do anything they can do to survive.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's gonna figure out a way... He figures out a way to survive and, like, Voldemort just doesn't see that coming.
But again, Fox, again, the ride or die. Drops the basilisk fang on top of the diary. So it's also taking the cue of that, where it's like...
Fox is really, like... Fox is the superhero of this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said this. So I forgot that Fox flies them out of the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, okay. Like, Fox comes in and, like, saves him. Fox comes and brings him the sorting hat and brings him all these tools. And Fox takes out the eyes. At that point, I was like... Okay, it's feeling a little too convenient. Like, like now he's gonna fly back out. I mean, I guess you did need a way to get him back out, but I was like, I don't know. It almost felt a little lazy at that point where it's like, well, Fox is just the answer to this whole scene.
Yeah. It was, yeah, but I mean, I'll give it to you. It's a magical creature.
But also, I mean, he needed to get out, and then they got him out. And it's great. And then he gets out, and he finds that Lockhart tried to obliviate Ron with Ron's wand. Ron's wand is, like, the second most valuable player in this book. It's Fox number one, Ron's broken wand number two.
Oh, yeah.
And so he just blasts his memory from himself. I love that.
So I love that he loses his memory, but, like, Harry doesn't know that at the time. You know, like, you've gotten blocked in by all these, like, rubble and stuff like that, and you're blocked off. Harry's gotta go on. He has to. Ron's stuck behind.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, they're in that moment of them parting, that they're both just like, I'll see you in a bit. Like, Harry's like, I'm gonna go get Ginny, and Ron's like, I'm gonna move this rubble. Like, this is, like, big freaking, like, rocks that are...
No, Harry needed Ron.
No, he did. And when he comes back, he says that Ron had opened up a sizable hole. Like,
yeah.
It was, like, so noteworthy, the amount of rubble that Ron had moved. And I just thought that that was, like, one of the sweetest things, because it's, like, Ron doesn't have a wand at this point, and he is stuck with Gilderoy Lockhart. And, you know, he just sends Gilderoy into an area and is, like, stay to yourself. But he's, like, I'm not gonna sit by and not do anything. Ron is strong, and he is going to...
And that's his sister.
That is my
sister. And his best friend.
Yeah. And so, like, the fact that he moves enough to where someone can get through is so impressive.
Yeah.
And that is a feat of strength and loyalty and love that is, you know, just... It's beautiful.
Yeah. No, that's... I feel like that's the kind of love that, like, saved Harry's life.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of love that he was giving... For his sister and for Harry. So they get out of there and they go up to Dumbledore's office, second time that we get to be in Dumbledore's office, and the Weasleys are there, And, you know, they kind of tell the story, and then it kind of starts, like, fading out more and more.
Aren't they in McGonagall's office?
Oh, they were in McGonagall's office, weren't they?
Yeah, but then Dumbledore was like, Harry, come talk to me.
But Dumbledore's there. That's why I was picturing Dumbledore's office. Okay, I'm wrong. They were in McGonagall's office.
I'm getting hung up on something stupid.
No, it's fine. Or somebody else's office. But it ends up with just Harry and Dumbledore talking.
Mm-hmm.
And Dumbledore kind of, like, starts alluding pretty strongly that, like, you can tell by this book, like, he knows that the Horcruxes exist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's suspecting Harry. Like, he's suspecting mm-hmm. something really strong with Harry. And Harry opens up about trying the Sorting Hat back on
mm-hmm.
and how he had asked the Sorting Hat, like, why he wasn't put in Slytherin. And it was basically just, like, because he asked.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry didn't feel good about that, you know, because he was basically like, oh, does that mean that I could still be in Slytherin? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing special about me that sets me apart that would put me in Gryffindor. And I love that moment with Dumbledore. He says, quote, "It is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are far more than our abilities." And it's mm-hmm. like, that's what sets you apart from Voldemort, is the fact that you don't make the choices that he makes. And that's everything.
Yeah. Well, and that Harry could have been in Slytherin and still done very well.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have necessarily even had to fully tap into his Voldemort side.
Yeah.
It's like, you would do really well here, but your choices have been to do good and to be loyal to your friends and to, you know, see things through when you see injustice. Like,
yeah,
that's what you've done.
That's who you are. That's mm-hmm. what sets you apart. And
exactly.
That's what's great. And then we see in action that very spirit that Harry has right after this, because that's when Lucius Malfoy storms in and he's got Dobby behind him. And this is when you realize, like, that Dobby belongs to mm-hmm. the Malfoys. And, you know, Harry tricks him. And
I love the gall that Harry has of being in the room with Dumbledore and Lucius. And Lucius is kind of, you know, talking his BS and doing whatnot.
Yeah.
And then, and he's like, I don't know how she got this diary. And I love that Harry just goes, yeah, you do. You put it in Ginny Weasley's, you know, put it in her book at Diagon Alley. He just straight up calls out a grown man who has the entitlement of all the privilege in the world and just, like, doesn't have any, like, no holds bar, is just like, I'm going to call you out on this. I saw you. I didn't know you did it then, but I saw you. I know that you have a bunch of stuff. I know that this is not the only thing of Voldemort's that you're going to have.
Yeah.
I know it's not the only dark thing that you have. And I know that you're not treating people right. Like, and so I love that he...
I'm going to trick you into setting mm-hmm. Dobby free.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to trick you into setting Dobby free. And I'm also, like, going to have the confidence to say this in front of Dumbledore. You know, like, he's got my back more than he's got your back. Like,
absolutely.
I'm 13, but I'm going to call you on your BS.
And you don't mm-hmm. scare me. I love that scene, and I love that that's, like, how it ends.
I love that it's the nasty sock. The sock that has been down the slimy mm-hmm. Chamber of Secrets passage. He's bloody. He's got all the, like, mm-hmm. that's going to be sweaty. It's disgusting. Takes it off and puts it in there, and that Lucius has to touch it, to throw it up in the air. And I love that he doesn't, like, just hand it. It throws it in the air, and Dobby, you know, at all costs,
has
gonna
to
pick
catch
it up.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
Such a good scene. I love Dobby so much. Dobby being free mm-hmm. is everything. So,
and to take it straight to the end, I love that Dobby and Harry's interaction, the last one that we have of the book, is Dobby, you know, pledging his loyalty, all this stuff, and Harry says, as long as you don't try and save my life again. You know, like,
yeah.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, Dobby's the best.
Too soon.
The soonest.
We're going to have to talk about it at some point. But yeah, so that is The Chamber of Secrets, the book.
Yeah.
So great. So we are going to end this episode with a game.
Yes. So the game is, my questions are a little looser with the Would You Rather, but they are.
The game is
Would You Rather. Yeah. So, my first question.
I have not heard these yet, so I'm excited.
Which injury would you like to end up in the infirmary for? 1, grow back the bones in your arm.
Mm.
2, decatifying yourself after a bad dose of polyjuice potion.
Yikes.
3, being petrified by a basilisk.
Okay.
4.
Oh, there's 4, sorry.
Basilisk poisoning. I mean, like, obviously Fox is gonna, like, cure you, but, like, what, like, you're injured in all of these.
Okay, that's easy. I am gonna go with regrowing bones. Sounds super painful. I think that's the one that would hurt the most, but it only takes a night, and then you can grow them all back. So I would rather have just one night of pain, because being petrified or being a cat, like, yeah, you're in there for a really, really long time. I don't want to be in the infirmary for that long. And then basilisk, like, you could die. Like, you are on death's door. This is a really, really scary injury. So even though you could potentially be healed faster than the broken bone is just like, can you just, like,
tough it out?
And I think for 12, 14 hours, I could tough it out.
Okay. I'm going to go with being petrified.
Okay.
You're not going to be, like, you're not going to feel it. You're not going to remember a thing. You're just napping for a while. And you're just, like, you got a free pass. Like, nobody's going to be asking you to do anything. And obviously, it's a very stressful time. I would love to tap out. Be in a, you know.
I see that.
You just petrified-induced coma for a little while.
Just got to wait for those mandrakes to start partying.
Yeah, exactly. Climbing in each other's butts.
Love it.
Okay. And then, would you rather be crab or goyle? I mean, like, based just purely on the name. Crab or goyle?
Goyle.
Goyle. Big goyle energy.
Big goyle
energy. Goyles?
Although, I might have to change my answer, because if you are goyle, you're just responding to goyle. Like, how often do you really say your own name unless you're Gilderoy Lockhart, which it's like every other word. But if I was crab, I would get to say goyle more. I want to be goyle.
Okay.
I want to be goyle.
I'm going to go more crab.
Okay.
I like the double B in the name.
Yeah,
I like
double the crab, but you get a silent E in there. Yeah. You get to trick people.
I like that you kind of have, like, a crab and, like, a gargoyle. Like, is goyle short for goyle? Gargoyle?
That's how I would explain it. They'd be like, what's your name? It's like gargoyle. No, but gar.
No gar.
No gar, just goyle.
All goyle.
I'm going to have to see if that handle still exists on Instagram, because I might need it.
No gar, all goyle.
No gar, all goyle.
All right. Stupid. Heard it here first, guys. Oh, all right, those are my...
Those are yours. Yeah. Okay, so these...
I'm so excited.
Would you rather
mm-hmm.
take your final exams with Ron's broken wand,
okay,
or attend Nearly Headless Nick's death day party without a jacket?
Oh, I hate being cold. I will risk the wand.
The wand, okay.
The wand chose me. The wand chooses the wizard, and I got chose by Spellotape, you know, broken wand.
You're only a year two, so it's not like you're taking the owls or the newts, so you could potentially do pretty horribly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here for that.
I'm going to attend Nearly Headless Nick's death day party without a jacket, because it's really cold, but again, I think I could just, like, bear down and just, like, deal with it. Whereas the anxiety level that I would feel taking an exam with a broken wand, I would have diarrhea for weeks.
Well, I'm not going to feel good, but here's the thing. I, again, hate being cold. Poor circulation. I'm not going to risk it.
No,
I know that that's going to be cold. I don't know that the test is going to go terribly.
Maybe
I might eat slug or vomit slugs, but, like...
What are some of the other things? His wand at one point, it starts whistling loudly. It smokes.
It smokes. I wish I would have written the quote down, but there's just a moment where, it's when McGonagall announces that they're still going to have the exams at the end of the semester, and Ron's face just falls, is so terrified. Can you imagine taking this test with this wand? Like,
that is definitely the moment that inspired this question.
Yeah, it's just, I need to know the quote. I'm sorry, guys. I'll do better.
We'll look it up. We'll have it for you. We'll throw it in a story or something. Okay, would you rather be Gilderoy Lockhart's personal assistant?
Oh, God.
And this, your choice. It can be pre or post Obliviate spell.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know what's worse. So be Gilderoy Lockhart's personal assistant or be Professor Binns' personal assistant.
I'm going to go...
Professor Binns is the ghost, the history professor.
Yeah. I know he's super boring, but, like, I do love history. But then Gilderoy Lockhart, you're going to have, like, fancier parties that you're going to get invited to. But then you have to deal with Gilderoy Lockhart. And I think that, like,
as his personal assistant, too, yeah. That's, like, next level. He's yeah. He's going to expect you to put up with all of this because it's literally your job.
I'm going to have to go with Professor Binns.
Same.
Yeah. Gilderoy is just too much. That's too much energy for me to handle. And
I feel like I would Professor take low Binns, energy. I mean, there's that scene where he tells them about the Chamber of Secrets, and it's like the first time that his students have paid attention in like 100 years mm-hmm. or something, and it like throws him off. So I feel like that would be your interactions with Professor Binns. It would be like coming in like, oh, Professor Binns, what do you need help with today? And he's going to look at you like he's never seen a person before.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just going to be like, would you like me to do this? And you could suggest something easy, and he's probably just going to be like, yes or no. And then you could just leave and you're done.
Also, he's going to tell things in like a really boring way, but you're always going to learn something. And yeah. I'm always down for
a story. Yeah.
Even if it's long and drawn out. Like this podcast.
Like this podcast. Okay, last question for this episode, going out with a bang, would you rather go to Azkaban or throw up slugs?
Oh, I'm going to go to Azkaban. I'm going to let my soul be partially taken out of my body on the regular basis by Dementors than have the texture of a slug coming out of my mouth. I don't like being cold. I have some weird quirks, and texture is definitely one of them. And, like, I would not do well with slugs.
Absolutely.
I will go mad and crazy and depressed in Azkaban. And I know it's cold there too, but like at that point I don't care about life. So like there I am. Same. I'm withering away in Azkaban over slugs.
Absolutely same. I'm going with Azkaban. I cannot. He threw up so much slugs.
So many slugs.
So many slugs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. If you've made it this far, you deserve a gold star. And thank you for listening.
Or maybe 10 points to your house.
Oh, 10 points Gryffindor, 10 points Slytherin, 10 points Ravenclaw, 10 points Hufflepuff.
0 points Slytherin.
0 points Slytherin.
Sorry for all my Slytherins out there, but like, this was a rough book for Slytherins to come out looking good.
Yeah, that pure blood password isn't doing you any favors.
Maybe rethink your lives.
Yes. Well,
you can be ambitious other places.
Yes. Okay, we're going to end it. I'm calling it right now. Okay. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter. You can find us everywhere that you get podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. We drop new episodes every Thursday. And you can find us on social media. We are on Instagram at the Basic Cinephile. We are on Facebook under the Basic Cinephile. We are on TikTok at the Basic Cinephile, and we are on Twitter at the Basic Cinef1. That is Cinephile without the ILE and the number 1. And we'll see you guys next week to discuss the movie of the Chamber of Secrets.
Let's go.
Let's go. All right. See you guys next week.